我们读一些科普作品的时候，
When we read some scientific works,
我们是能听到说，在19世纪、20世纪初，
always heard that in the early 20th century,
很多人都没读过什么书。
many people haven't read any books.
但是他呢，照样做出了改写物理历史的重大研究。
However, he also made significant contributions to writing the history of physics.
比如说，法拉第，
For example, in the case of a large-scale event,
他只读过小学，
he only finished elementary school.
他却是成了电磁学领域的奠基人。
However, he became a pioneer in the field of electromagnetism.
而富兰克林呢，他只读了2年书，一样。
And Franklin, he only read for 2 years.
他辍学务工，
He dropped out of school and worked.
最后呢，依靠着自学完成了雷电相关研究。
Finally, I relied on self-study to complete the research related to lightning.
后来发明了避雷针，
Later, the lightning rod was invented.
而如今我们做科研，
And now we do research.
几乎必须要读完硕博。
Almost have to finish a master's and doctoral degree.
普通人很难自学做出重大的科学突破。
It is difficult for ordinary people to achieve major scientific breakthroughs through self-study.
那造成这种变化的原因呢，有2个。
The two reasons for this change are
第一个呢，是我们现代的科学研究呢，行话太多。
the first one is that the jargon used in current scientific research is too much.
我总是说，现在的科学术语类似魏晋文人写篇文。
I always say that the scientific terminology of today is similar to what a Wei-Jin-era scholar would write in an essay.
没有人带路，
No one is guiding.
看不懂前人堆积的这个海量的论文。
I can't understand the huge amount of papers that have been accumulated by previous generations.
靠自己摸索，
Through self-exploration,
根本无从下手。
there is no way to start.
第二，
Second,
也是一般的基础科学研究。
also, it is a fundamental scientific research.
早就被老一辈科学家挖掘完了。
The old generation of scientists have already discovered it.
而如今想拿下重大的科研突破，
And now, to achieve a major scientific breakthrough,
必须离不开大科学装置。
must rely on large scientific instruments.
那比如说，我们周边就有许多国之重器。
For example, there are many state-owned key projects in our surrounding area.
深圳南科大有冷冻电镜集群，松山湖呢有中国闪电中子源基地，江门。
Shenzhen Nanshan. There is a cold press juice shop in the Nanshan Lake. There is a Chinese snack shop in the base of the Purpose Garden. And there is a Chinese snack shop in Jiangmen.
还有地下中微子装置，
There are also underground neutrino detectors.
那这些大科学装置
These large scientific instruments.
帮助人类更好的探究原子物理。
Help humans to better explore atomic physics.
那人类第一套大科学装置的缔造者。
The creator of the first set of large-scale scientific instruments.
就是今天我给大家分享的
That's what I want to share with you today.
1913年诺贝尔物理学奖获得者昂奈斯。
Ernest Rutherford, the Nobel laureate in physics for 1913.
他搭建了大型低温装置，成功的液化了氦气。
He successfully built a large-scale cryogenic apparatus and liquefied helium.
第一次在实验室里边发现了超导现象。
The first time the phenomenon of superconductivity was discovered in a laboratory.
接下来我分享一下安内斯的成长经历。
Next, I'd like to share Ansgrove's story.
他老爸是荷兰一个砖窑厂的老板。
His father is the owner of a brick factory in Holland.
他小时候呢，总是跟着老爸去转。
When he was a child, he always followed his father around.
然后在砖窑厂见到了类似流水线。
Then I saw a similar assembly line in the brick factory.
这种生产方式
This production method
为他搭建低温实验室提供了思想启蒙。
He provided the inspiration for building a low temperature laboratory.
那他老妈呢，出生在一个建筑家庭，那艺术修养很高。
His mother comes from a family of architects, and the artistic influence is very strong.
他家里边学是画画呀。
He learned to draw at home.
写诗这种氛围。
This kind of atmosphere.
并且他弟弟。
And his younger brother.
姐夫呀，都是专业的画家。
My brother-in-law is a professional painter.
而那时呢，从小也喜欢画画，写诗。
And in that case, he also liked to draw and write poetry since childhood.
早年还是一个文艺小青年。
In my early years, I was a young man with artistic sensibilities.
后来半路转行学了物理。
Later, I switched careers and studied physics.
那昂内斯呢，就从荷兰去了德国海德堡大学读书。
Then he went to Heidelberg University in Germany.
当时的老师是本森·蒂尔霍夫，文斯森导师。
The teacher at the time was Dr. Ben Schmidt, a mentor.
就是1910年诺贝尔物理学奖。
It is the 1910 Nobel Prize in Physics.
范德瓦尔斯。
Van der Waals.
我接下来讲一下他的研究经历。
I'm going to talk about his research experience now.
1873年
1873
范德瓦尔斯就提出了气液固态方程
Van der Waals proposed the gas liquid solid equation.
那科学家呢，就陆续将氧气
The scientists in turn gradually introduced oxygen into the container.
氮气
Nitrogen
氢气这一类气体成功的液化了
Hydrogen, like other gases, has been successfully liquefied.
但是当时科学家认为氦气是一种永久气体
However, scientists at the time believed that helium was a permanent gas.
不能被液化
Cannot be liquefied.
在当时的科学装置大多数是一些分散的小实验室。
At that time, most scientific instruments were in scattered small laboratories.
而那时呢，就借鉴自家专长的分工模式。
And at that time, they adopted the division of labor model specific to their own department.
在每一个环节呢，安排了不同的实验员，搭建起来一套制冷流水线。
In each stage, different experimenters set up a refrigeration pipeline.
实现了人类历史上第一套大科学装置。
Achieved the first set of large-scale scientific instruments in human history.
那它怎么从常温降低到绝对零度呢？
So, how does it go from room temperature to absolute zero?
原理其实很简单。
The principle is actually very simple.
第一步呢，它在室温情况下。
The first step is that it is at room temperature.
将氯甲烷高压压缩，压缩以后呢。
After compressing chloromethane under high pressure.
装置就会发烫。
The device will get hot.
它再用水降温。
It is cooling down with water.
然后接下来最关键的一步就是高压甲烷从一个小孔猛地喷出来。
And the next most crucial step is to suddenly spray high pressure methane from a small hole.
气态膨胀就会吸收降温。
Gas expansion will absorb heat and cool down.
然后就将整个设备从常温降到了-70°。
Then the entire device was cooled from room temperature to -70 degrees.
第二步呢，
The second step is
它在-70° 的情况下，
it can withstand temperatures as low as -70 degrees.
将这种气体更换成了空气，
Replace this gas with air.
继续对空气加压。
Continue to pressurize the air.
同样原理就降到了-183°。那一样。
The same principle applies to reaching -183 degrees.
第三步就是空气换成了氦气。
The third step is to replace the air with helium.
从-183降低到了253。
From -183 to 253.
最后一步，
The final step.
它就是将氮气从-253降到了-269。
It is to reduce the nitrogen from -53 degrees Celsius to -69 degrees Celsius.
也就是四开二文压缩成了液氮。
It was compressed into a professional ant.
它就是分步骤换不同的气体降温。
It is to cool by changing different gases in steps.
那有了这套大科学装置，
With this large scientific instrument,
那就可以做很多研究了。
that would allow for a lot of research.
比如说3年以后就发现了超导体。
For example, if a superconductor is discovered in 3 years,
那别的科学家在这套科学装置上面，
other scientists have been working on this scientific device.
又发现了液氦超流的奇特现象。
Another strange phenomenon of liquid helium superfluidity has been discovered.
超流性呢是特别有趣的。
A superfluid is a particularly interesting phenomenon.
它就类似一碗水，
It's like a bowl of water.
它平平的放在桌子上面，
It lay flat on the table.
但是如果发生超流体以后，
However, if a superconductor occurs,
这碗水它会自动的往碗外边会溢出去。
this bowl of water will automatically overflow outside the bowl.
最后，我分享一下我对昂奈斯的一点感受。
Finally, I want to share my feelings about online.
首先呢，就是父母的行为对孩子一辈子的影响。
First, the behavior of parents has a profound impact on their children's lives.
他父亲是个砖瓦厂厂长。
His father was the factory manager of a brick and tile plant.
他常年呢，就是统筹人员去做着流水线的工作。
He has been working as a coordinator for years, doing this repetitive work on the assembly line.
那在这种耳濡目染的情况下，
In such an environment of influence,
对昂奈斯把流水线分工模式搬进了实验室。
When O'Neill brought the assembly line model into the lab,
规划
planning,
不同的研究员做实验，
different researchers conducted experiments.
搭建这套低温装置起了非常大的作用。
This low-cost device played a very important role.
第二点呢，
The second point is,
他虽然是个物理学家，
although he is a physicist,
但是受到母亲艺术行为的影响。
However, influenced by my mother's artistic behavior,
他一辈子都喜欢欣赏艺术。
He has always loved to appreciate art.
其实很多科学家他都有对艺术特别的爱好。
Actually, many scientists have a special interest in art.
比如说，爱因斯坦喜欢拉小提琴，
For example, Einstein liked to play the violin.
然后像费曼，
Then, like Feynman,
他喜欢打手鼓，
he likes to play the drums.
对吧？
Right?
这种艺术呢，可以缓解科研压力。
This kind of art can relieve research pressure.
那我也建议各位家长多关注孩子们的人文学科的培养。
I also suggest that parents pay more attention to their children's humanities education
那接下来步入 AI 时代，
and step into the AI era.
我们的审美鉴赏能力以及人文素养会越发凸显出来。
Our aesthetic appreciation and humanistic qualities will become increasingly apparent.
人类相较于 AI 独有的个人价值。
The unique personal value of humans compared to AI.